Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Talk Business with Howard, where CEOs, presidents, and business owners go for practical advice and creative solutions to help business flow. And now, here's your host, the voice of business advice, Howard Lewinter.
Hello and welcome to Talk Business with Howard. I'm Howard Lewinter, business expert and strategist to CEOs, presidents, and business owners throughout the United States. Do you have clout? Are you an influencer? Are your words worth retweeting? My guest today is Mark Schaefer. Mark is one of the most acclaimed and accomplished marketing consultants in America, with a special emphasis in social media marketing. And don't just take my word for it. A few of his recent accomplishments include Forbes magazine calls him one of the Power 50 social media influencers of the world. Ad Age magazine names Mark a Power 150 marketing blogger with his blog at businessgrow.com. Mark has 30 years of global sales and marketing experience, a career highlight was studying under Peter Drucker, who's considered to be the creator and innovator of modern management. Mark is on the show today to talk about marketing, social media, and two of his best-selling books. His latest book, A Return on Influence, and also The Tao of Twitter. Mark is the guy that you're going to want to listen from the beginning of the show to the end of the show and not miss a word, because everything that he says has content, value, and is really interesting and will help you move your business forward. Mark, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Well, Howard, thanks for that that amazing introduction. I feel like I should be like accepting the Nobel Prize or something.
Well, Mark, let's get started right away because I have a lot of questions for you. And, let's start the conversation today with a quote from your book, A Return on Influence. And the quote is, "We're on the cusp of a marketing revolution." What do you mean by that? Can you explain a little further?
Well, this is so exciting, Howard, because, you know, if you look at the history of marketing and advertising, really it's been led by executives. It's been led by people at a television station or an advertising agency or maybe in a marketing agency. But this is what's different now. This new marketing revolution is being led by us, by people, because for the first time in history, we have a voice. Anyone can be a publisher. The access to high-speed internet is now pretty widespread globally, either cheap or free. And then you've got these free, easy-to-use publishing tools like Twitter and Facebook and blogging that allow anyone to publish. And companies are actually beginning to quantify this. They're trying to quantify who is creating buzz. And companies are now turning to us, the people who are creating internet buzz, instead of celebrities and sports stars who would normally be part of their marketing mix. They're starting to connect with people who are these powerful word-of-mouth influencers, which, of course, has always been important, but it's been very difficult and expensive to identify them in the past. Now, because these companies are slicing and dicing and dissecting and analyzing all these things that we do on the social web, they've created these powerful algorithms that can make these assessments relatively quickly for these companies and brands interested in finding their powerful brand advocates.
You know, Mark, there's no question that we're in a marketing revolution, but I'm not sure that most business people really know how all of these changes have affected us. So can you please explain how they have affected us, and is it equal for small business, and does it affect small business, and does it affect big corporations at the same time?
Well, you know, it's kind of ironic because it is a revolution, but in a way, it's also kind of going back to the future. An example that I use in my classes is if you think about how people bought and sold 1,000 years ago in a medieval marketplace, you did it face-to-face. You wanted to build a relationship. You wanted to build trust. There was intimacy. There was immediacy. If you were angry about something, if you were wronged, you told those people right away. We didn't have advertising. We didn't have marketing. The only thing that really counted was your word-of-mouth reputation. Then in the last 100 years, we had mass marketing. We had radio, TV, internet, and we've created this digital divide between us and our customers. And so we've lost that intimacy. We've lost that trust. That is coming back now, Howard, with the social web, how we are connecting, communicating, marketing through social media. People expect to connect with real people. If they're angry, you're going to know about it. If you cheat them, you are going to be penalized. Your reputation online is going to suffer. So it's so ironic because this is the way people want to buy. This is the way they want to connect with companies. And it's the way they've done for hundreds and hundreds of years. The last 100 years has been the exception. Now we're basically coming back. And I think that's really the big impact, Howard.
Your book leads us down a path. It examines the importance of influence from the marketing perspective, and it illustrates the difference of online and offline influence. Mm-hmm. It also introduces us to the citizen influencer. Can you please share with us the difference and an overview between influence then and now?
Yeah, well, really, I got quite interested in this because I had this epiphany where I wrote a blog post that got the attention. It went viral. It was a popular blog post, and it got the attention of a reporter from the New York Times. And a couple weeks after the post ran, she found this blog post and called me up and said, "Mr. Schaefer, I'm doing an article for the New York Times. I'm really interested in this trend. I Googled the trend. I found your post. Can I interview you for the New York Times?" So I was featured in the Sunday New York Times. Now, I mean, who am I? I'm a teacher. I'm a blogger. And now I'm in the New York Times. And this article gets syndicated. It goes all over the country. It goes all over the world. My words, my influence are showing up in the Sunday Daily Mail in London. And it made me pause and think, what's going on here? I'm not your typical kind of influencer. I'm not a sports star. I'm not a movie star. I've never been elected to political office. And yet my voice is starting to be heard around the world. So I started to research this. What's different between power and influence in the offline world? And that's really what's been written about. That's what's been studied. And how is that different now on the internet, where there is no hierarchy, there is no authority, there are no rules? In fact, people hate rules on the internet, and yet there is power, there is influence. How is that occurring? And so that's really the first half of the book, and I examine the differences and the opportunities with power in the offline world and the online world. And I'll just give you one example for the sake of time. One example of influence in the offline world is something called social proof. So in the absence of truth, we look for clues in our environment to make decisions. So for example, if you're driving down the road and you see a horrible wreck and there are hurt people along the sides of the road and two people are shouting instructions and one looks like a pizza delivery man and one is dressed like a doctor, you're probably going to listen to the doctor because they've got the lab coat on. And so we don't know what to do. We've got to make quick decisions, and so we look for these clues. Now, after a period of time, we may figure out that the pizza delivery man is actually an emergency specialist and the doctor is really a pharmacist, and that we really should listen to the guy dressed like the pizza delivery man. We can figure that out in the real world. You can't do that all the time on the internet. So these badges of social proof become very, very important. they look for things like likes and the number of Twitter followers, and even something like a clout score, KLOUT, which is talked about in the book as one of these companies that are the leading company, really, as far as trying to quantify influence. So people are in this information-dense world. They're hungry for clues. They're hungry for shortcuts to help them make decisions. And in the online world, these badges of recognition and authority are very, very important, even more important than in the offline world.
When your content started to go around the world, it must have been extremely exciting.
It was thrilling, and it was very humbling. And you know, it's a great point, Howard, because you know, this is another point that I bring up in the book, is that the big difference between the offline world and the online world is this idea of now we all have the ability to share content. So through your podcast, your voice and your influence can get spread to business leaders all around the country, perhaps all around the world. And this is an opportunity available to you, available to me, only in the last, you know, let's say 3 years. And so that's why this book is so important. It's so important to understand this, because this trend can only be happening now. And that's what's revolutionary about it.
You know, people will always talk in our society about higher education. And one of the tendencies that I find with business people is as they get older, they've graduated from school, years have gone by, they really don't take time to educate themselves. And a book like yours is somewhat like a master's degree in marketing. It's not just that someone should read it. They need to study it, because it's not about me saying to someone, buy your book. I'm saying to CEOs, presidents, and business owners, get with it. Get into the modern world or get left behind. Here's a guy who has a lot of information that's going to really help you. It's going to move you forward. It's going to open up your mind. So don't hesitate. Go get the book. Not that I'm trying to sell books for Mark Schaefer. What I'm trying to do is get the CEO, president, or business owners to run a bit better business. Now, in your book, you talk about how our information-dense society has brought about weapons of influence. It sounds awesome, doesn't it? Weapons of influence. So what are they, and how are they used?
Well, this is what I was referring to around social proof as being one of these weapons of influence. And this is really a model that was created by Dr. Robert Cialdini. Dr. Cialdini is just a great intellectual hero of mine. He's a professor at Arizona State University. He's a worldwide known speaker and author. And as I started to research this topic, Dr. Cialdini went undercover for 3 years to develop this model of offline influence. And it's social proof, as we've talked about, authority, reciprocity, which is another very important aspect of power on the social web, where humans, if you do somebody a favor, you have this very powerful innate desire to repay that favor. So he created this model, which were six weapons of influence. And really, I examine this in the first part of the book to say what's different now. And as I did my research and I did my interviews, it occurred to me that something was missing, and that's this idea of content. So I interviewed Dr. Cialdini. He was kind enough to spend some time with me. And after about 45 minutes, I said, well, Dr. Cialdini, you know, I'm a fan of your book. I love your work. But it seems to me, in the online world, something is missing from your book now, because he only studied the offline world. And so we started to talk about this, and he said, you're right. I think you're onto something here. So he really encouraged me to pursue this, and he's quoted, of course, extensively in the book because he is the authority on influence, and he really encouraged me to pursue this. So that's when I really knew I had something important, when Dr. Cialdini said, yeah, you've got something here. You need to go for it.
Isn't it interesting how fate and destiny shapes people's lives? if you hadn't have picked up the phone call or sent him an email or called him, however you got in touch with him, if you hadn't have talked to him, your life might be very different today.
Well, that's certainly right. And that, in fact, that's one of the things I write about in my first book, the Tao of Twitter, which is this idea of you know, really the business case for the social web is you just never know. It's like networking on steroids, and there's this majestic random synergy of people and interests and ideas colliding in this glorious way. And it's just all businesses, big and small, have an opportunity to tap into this. And you know, sure, there is some magic involved in it, but as I write in my book, there's also a process, a pattern that you can follow behind every social media success story, behind every case study. There is a pattern. And if you know that pattern, you're going to increase the probability of creating benefits for your business on the web as well.
So no matter how many years you've been in business, no matter what age group you're in, you, as a business person, we all need to keep an open mind and we need to look at what's happening. And one of the things that I find really interesting is at times I'll be talking to someone and I'll think, you know, this person is not going to be cooperative and they're not going to be interesting to work with and they're not going to be open and listen. And all of a sudden you get into a conversation and you find that this is one of the best conversations you've ever had. And on the other hand, you're talking to someone who initially you're very excited about talking to them and the conversation just goes thud. It's like there's nothing to it. So you can't prejudge. You have to really talk to people every single day while you're in business. And this is one of the things that social media and the internet really does. But let's go back to basics for a second, because I think people would be interested to know how technology is impacting innovation in marketing, and how does business people, how do they reach influencers? How do they become an influencer? I can hear it now. They're out there saying, well, gee, I'm sitting in my office and I'm in my town and I'm doing business, but I want to be an influencer. How do I do that?
Yeah. Well, great question. And, you know, I knew that would be the question on everybody's mind, you know, when I wrote this book was, okay, this is great. This is a great theory now, but what do I do about it? So, you know, I've actually got two chapters in the book dedicated to how do you increase your own personal influence on the web or your company's influence on the web, and then practical applications, best practices, case studies. How are some creative ways that companies are tapping into this? And, I mean, let me just give you a small illustration of what I mean by this, of tapping into these citizen influencers. Let's say you have a sandwich shop or maybe a chain of sandwich shops in your town. So probably for years you've been taking out advertisements and maybe you've got coupons and you're saying, we have the most delicious sandwiches in town. Now, think how much more powerful it is if you had someone sitting in your shop, posting on Facebook about, now this is someone who is well known and well respected around food. And these algorithms show when these people create content around food, they create buzz. They attract attention. Now, so these people are respected word of mouth influencers. How much more powerful would it be to have someone in your shop actually eating the sandwich, creating the content, taking a picture, putting it on Facebook, putting it on Twitter, putting it on Instagram, checking in on Foursquare, saying, I'm at this restaurant. Oh, my gosh, look at this sandwich. Look how beautiful it is. It's absolutely delicious. People contact them back. Oh, this is amazing. Where are you? What location are you at? What do you love about this sandwich? This is very, very powerful. And the problem is, and the opportunity is, businesses have always known that these people who can drive actions through their friends and through their family members, that is the most powerful way, the most cost-effective way to get your business known. Word of mouth, all right? But we've never been able to find these people before, and now we can actually do that. We can find people by their influence, by topic, and then nurturing these relationships. Many companies are regarding this as an entirely new marketing channel. And again, as I said, it only could have happened in the last 2 or 3 years. And I like what you said, Howard, about the importance of keeping your mind open, because there is definitely a first mover advantage in this space. You're trying to build an emotional connection between your company and your brand and these powerful people who are out there who already love you. So if you're out there first and you're providing them great information and helpful information and maybe free merchandise or something, when your competitor comes down the line, they're going to say, I already like this person. I'm already working with this company. So there is a very powerful motivation, I think, to learn about this now and start building a competency in this area.
Or be left behind.
You are going to be left behind.
Social media, to me...
You got to go digital or die.
Good comment. Social media, to me, is like a big networking party.
Yeah.
Except the difference is, and when most business people go to networking meetings, it's the same people who show up to the network meetings, and after a period of time, it's pointless because you're talking to the same people about the same things, where you have the world in front of you in this little box called a computer. You can reach out, you can touch people, you can communicate with them, you can show them your brilliance, you can have them find you because they need something, they need you, you can place content that's relevant, and you can get people's attention where, you know, it's not too many years ago, we were limited, we didn't have the opportunity to do that. Now we are no longer limited, which means we have to get better at what we do. Now, there are other things happening here, and there's a website called Clout, K-L-O-U-T, which I would lay odds that most business people have never heard of Clout. Mm-hmm. What is Clout? How did it come to be? How does it benefit businesses? And if we're not really paying attention, how does it hurt businesses?
Well, so if you buy into my argument that creating content and creating something that goes viral on the web is a new way to capture influence, then you step back and you say, all right, now you made the observation, Howard, that it must have been exciting when my content starts to go viral like this. And you know, as a content creator, if your podcast is getting a big reaction, you know it. You've got the data. You've got the analytics that show this is moving. This is getting traction. So you can measure that. Now, you can also measure how people react to it. Are they tweeting it? Are they retweeting it? Are they clicking a link? Are they leaving a comment? These are all discrete things that we can measure. So these companies are looking at this combination of data and analytics and creating these algorithms to say, who does a good job at this? Who does a good job at creating buzz? And they're actually assigning you a number, generally from 0 to 100, but the scales kind of differ. And some of the leading companies in this space are Clout, K-L-O-U-T, Cred, which is K-R-E-D, Peer Index, and another company that actually announced itself after I wrote the book is called Opinions. It's like Opinion, but APP at the beginning. And they're even moving beyond the social web to look at how data is moving, how content is moving. Over 4.5 million sources on the web. They're slicing, they're dicing, they're analyzing all this information to say who creates buzz. And anybody can go on to these sites and see and look at your number. And then in my book, I tell you, if you are interested in getting into this, how do you make it better? How do you increase your influence? How do you do a more effective job on the social web?
Now, the Clout score is 0 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
What's an acceptable cloud score? What cloud score shows you off? What cloud score is, well, I need to work on it and raise it, but no, I'm getting up there.
Well, the world average is 19 out of 100. And, you know, generally people say if you're in the 30s, you pretty well know what you're doing. That's a pretty respectable score. If you're in the 50s, you're in the 95th percentile. So, you know, it's relatively easy to move your score from, 19 to 30 or maybe even 30 to 40. But once you start getting around 50, it becomes very, very difficult. I mean, that, now you're really in an elite area, and, you know, you're in with the biggest brands, and you're almost like at a celebrity status, and it gets more and more difficult to get up there. But certainly someone with a score in the 30s or 40s would be very, very respectable.
Cloud also does something else from my point of view. It tells you whether you're being successful. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know what's out there. It's
mm-hmm.
a vast land. It's like saying I'm in New York and what's happening in California. But if you look
mm-hmm.
at your cloud score and you've got a respectable number, you know
mm-hmm.
that you're doing an okay job
yeah.
getting your content out there. Now,
right.
I know that you and I could talk literally all day, but what's one or two tips in how to raise your cloud score?
Well, you know, my advice is the same advice I would give anybody that's trying to have an effective presence on the web. Is, okay, so what are the two main factors here? You've got to create content, good content, and you've got to ignite it. You've got to move. If you did a podcast and nobody ever listened to it, you wouldn't be very influential. So you've got to create great content or aggregate great content. That's, you know, step number one. And I talk, you know, extensively in the book about how to do that. One of the tips I give is to whatever content you create, whether it's a podcast or a video or a blog post or a slide presentation, if you consistently create content that's RITE, relevant, interesting, timely, and entertaining, if you kind of create it through that lens, over time, you're creating shareable content. Now, the second part of this is the network strategy, and that's what most businesses miss, what most individuals miss. They do a good job on their blog, they do a good job on their podcast, but they haven't surrounded themselves with people who are interested in it, who are willing to share it. They just say, well, build it and they will come. You wouldn't do that in a business, and you shouldn't do that with your content either. Creating your audience, creating your tribe to help you share the content should be a strategy. It should be a mindful activity. And then once you do that, you need to engage with these people. You know, you just can't broadcast. You've got to engage with them. You've got to be helpful to them. You have a human, active, consistent presence on the social web, so they'll get to know you, trust you, and hopefully share the content. So that's and the irony is, Howard, is that that is the advice I would give anyone who wants to be effective on the internet, and it's also what it takes long term to increase your cloud score.
Now, I know you like to lighten it up. You like to have interesting things in your content, and on Fridays you post a cartoon every Friday.
Yes. Well, I mean, because go back to my formula, RITE. Now, relevant, interesting, timely, entertaining. The most difficult of those is entertaining, because we talked about this information dense world. How do you stand out? And think about the content you like to share. It's probably really interesting, compelling, educational, or funny. So there's some entertainment value. And yet, in our companies, we don't sit around thinking, how can we be more entertaining today? But to be successful on the web, I think that is increasingly important. We've got to raise the bar on that a little bit. We've got to raise expectations. So I looked around, and, you know, I'm a blogger, and by Friday, I'm tired. You know, I'm tired of writing. I'm tired of commenting. I want something light. So I thought, you know what? I'll bet there's a lot of people like that. So I kind of got hooked up through the internet with some people who do these funny social media cartoons, and I pay them to create an original social media cartoon every Friday just because it's different. Nobody else has that, so it's a way for me to stand out and provide something that's entertaining.
Well, I think that's interesting. You surround yourself with the best people, and you present their materials too, which helps them and helps you and helps your audience at the same time. Very interesting. Now, in many ways, you're a futurist. You see things before they happen.
Mm-hmm.
You look into our new way of marketing, and you're advising people as to what they should do to get out of their old ways. But what do you see for the future? What's going to be happening in the near term? And how should business people prepare for the future?
You know, I think we can really look at some of the themes that we've had in our talk so far, Howard. Number one is this idea of content and the importance of creating content on the web that is high quality, interesting, and helpful to people. So content creators, I think, are going to be a very, very important part of marketing in the foreseeable future, more than ever before. Another very important trend and skill set, I think, is data mining, statistical analysis, because at all of these different places, all of these different platforms, websites and blogs and the social web, people are leaving behind data. They're leaving behind this personal information. And companies like Facebook or big companies and brands, even a small company like mine has something like Google Analytics, which is completely free. And if you don't have some sort of analytics on your website, I'm talking to your listeners now, there's just no excuse anymore. You can get in 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you can have Google Analytics attached to your website for absolutely no cost, and a whole world of data is going to be before your eyes. Now, the trick is, what is that data telling us about who is visiting the site? How long are they spending there? Where are they coming from? Where are they spending, where are they entering? Where are they leaving? Why are they leaving? Why aren't they buying? All this is now available to us. And so this analysis of connecting these dots, connecting the data and turning it into something that's actionable for marketing people, I think is very, very key. And then the third trend I'll mention is really the next evolution in the digital space. It's something called augmented reality. And maybe some of your listeners have heard the buzz around this thing called Google Glasses, where you'll be able to more or less wear these glasses and see a digital layer on top of the world. And you can already do this today in many examples, many applications through your smartphone. If you have certain types of apps on your phone, you can walk down the street and you can see which bars are serving your favorite beer, or you can walk down the street and see and maybe get coupons without checking an email, without checking into a website. This information is all going to be pushed to you, and there'll be a digital layer over the world. This is going to really pick up steam over the next 12 to 18 months, and it's going to change everything again. If you think your head is swimming about social media, you ain't seen nothing yet, because this is going to create so many new opportunities. It's going to change the way we interact with companies. It's going to change the way we're entertained. It's going to change the way we learn and train. It's going to change the way we communicate and interact. So that's coming down the line, and that's going to be coming very quickly.
Many business experts are one-dimensional. When you talk to them, they will tell you what they do, how they do it, and they'll tell the next person the same thing, how they do it. But in your study of social media and business, you certainly are not multidimensional. So you are multidimensional, excuse me, and you have so many subjects that you could talk about. But let's take a few minutes and just talk about your first book, The Tao of Twitter, which, of course, is an interesting title. So can you just tell us where you got the title and just a quick overview of the book?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm a teacher, and I teach at the Rutgers University, and I taught at a college in Tennessee before that. And as I was talking about social media and teaching about Twitter, I realized there was no way I could cover all this material, you know, in an hour or an hour and a half or however long the class was. And the number one question I was being asked was, can you help me with Twitter? And Howard, as you know, Twitter can be very confusing. It took me 3 to 4 months, really, to figure it out. So I decided, you know what, when people ask me that question, can you help me with Twitter, that is not something you can just answer over a cup of coffee or a phone call. I am going to write out the path. And the Chinese word for path is Tao. So I thought Tao of Twitter was kind of a clever title. And that actually the Chinese, official Chinese pronunciation is Dao. But it is a path because a lot of people get confused about hashtags and kind of the language and the culture of Twitter. And I step back and I say, let's look at the mindset. Let's look at the human side of this. What are we trying to do and how should we go about this? Because at the end of the day, we want to create business benefits. So let's step back and kind of like backward engineer this. And through some very interesting and entertaining stories, I teach this path. And it's been so rewarding because this has become the number one selling Twitter book in the world by far. And I get messages from people every single day saying, thank you for writing this book. You have opened my world times 10. And it makes me feel great because I know how frustrating this can be. And it's just so exciting to hear these stories of how it's helped people. I got an email from a guy in Wales. He runs a radio station over there. And the subject line of the email was, the book that changed my life. And he told me this amazing, inspirational story of how he followed the path that I put in the book. And he said, and everything you said would happen has happened, including he found, not only did he get business benefits, but he got some special help for his autistic child that he didn't even know existed because of the path I laid out in the book. And that's just amazing to me. It's so humbling. And now a new edition of the book is coming out at the end of it's going to be in late July or early August of this year, and it's now available on Amazon. So I was able to add some new content, update some things that have changed in the last couple years for Twitter, and kind of relaunch this book for the next couple years. So that's very, very exciting.
It's available, or it's available for pre-sale?
It's available right now, and it'll ship by the end of July.
So get your copy. Now, I find that there's an order to the universe. It's just amazing. You know, you see how people do things, and I contend that there's new technology, there are new ways of communicating, but in my observation of life, there's a path to life that most people follow, and there may be several paths, but there is an order to the universe. There's also an order to business and a way to do things, and, you know, Twitter is really interesting because when anything new comes out, people always use it in the wrong way. They're not using it in the right way. You know, I'm going to Starbucks now to get a cup of coffee. Well, I don't know that too many business people care that you're a Dunkin' Donuts person or a Starbucks person. So what are one or two secrets, that magic word, secrets, that you can tell us to influence people on Twitter?
Well, you know, I think I love the comment that you made about how people, they start kind of like using it wrong. And when you think about how when every new technology came out, the first thing they did was try to copy the old technology. So when movies came out, basically what they did was they filmed plays, because that's what they had before. They didn't really explore the possibilities of the new form. When TV first came out, it simply was, they were just moving like, radio basically was an extension of vaudeville, and TV was an extension of radio, and the internet was an extension of brochures, because that's how we sold our business. And I'm old enough to remember that. We had brochures, and then we took these brochures, and Twitter and Facebook were the same way. So people are saying, oh, great, this is another way just to advertise my business. And that, getting over that is the big secret, Howard, is to realize this is new. This is a new technology. This is a new channel. And let me tell you something. People are sick of being advertised to. They're sick of being sold to. They're sick of being marketed to. They go to Facebook because they want to relax. And they want to have fun, and they don't want to hear about your new ball bearings. However, they won't spend 3 seconds with one of your advertisements, but they'll spend 30 minutes listening to a great story, or watching a how-to video, or reading a blog post that teaches them a new way to use your product that will help them save time or save money or have more fun in their lives. So, I mean, it is like networking, as you mentioned, Howard. It's like if you go to a networking meeting and you're just shoving ads at people, you're not going to connect. But if you try to really listen to people and understand them and connect to them in a personal way, you're going to develop a relationship. You're going to develop trust. And that's the magic here. We can now do that in a digital way. We can do that in a global way. We can connect to people we never even dreamed existed before. And that's, you know, this mindset that I talk about in the book and this different approach to say it's not advertising, to really use the channel the way it's meant to be used, that's the real secret.
If we're going to use Twitter the way it's meant to be used, one of the most important things we can do is to connect to the right audience.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we connect to the right audience? And I think one of the things that I hear from people is, well, I'm trying to connect to them, but they're not connecting back to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's your comment on that?
Well, this, you know, it is difficult. And I mean, I think there's another good parallel to real life. You go to different networking meetings, and sometimes you'll go to a networking meeting for 4 months or 5 months, and you're just saying, this isn't working. You know, I've got to try something else. Now, the nice thing about the social web is that you can experiment very quickly, very broadly, and then keep, you know, changing and experimenting for very little risk and very low cost. And Howard, you are so right. You're absolutely right about the importance of connecting with the right audience. It's absolutely critical. And in the Tao's Twitter book, I actually have an entire chapter dedicated to that. I've got, I think it's 20 or maybe it's 22 different methods of finding people who have some propensity to be interested in you. So let me just give you one of those that are in the book. There's a website called Twello. It's like the yellow pages for Twitter. You can search for people who are active on the social web by every category imaginable, by their hobbies, by the companies they work for, by their job titles, and by geographical area. So let's go back to our sandwich example. If you want to find people who are interested in, let's say, food or pizza or ethnic food or whatever you sell, you can go onto a site like that and search for people in your area or in your state or in your country, whatever your target market is, and then find those people and follow them and start to try to build relationships with them. So there's lots of examples in the book, but I think the key idea here is that you can't be passive about this. This has to be a mindful, systematic, and continuous activity to keep building that audience, Because if you don't, all the effort you put on the social web is going to be a waste of time.
If we're listening to the newscast, whether it's on one of the channels that are broadcast for free or we're listening to cable, they always have the teaser copy that they give you, you know, after the break, we're going to talk about, and they never tell you exactly what they're talking about, but they give you some teaser copy that you go, whoa, I don't think I want to change the channel. I think I want to listen. So on your blog, you have an article about the Olympics coming up on businessgrow.com and how Twitter is going to transform the Olympics. So let's give some teaser copy here as to what that article is all about so people will go right to it and read it.
Yeah, and actually the website is Businesses Grow. It's plural, businessgrow.com.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Because if you go to businessgrow.com, you're going to get really confused because businessgrow.com is actually a website. It's one of these placeholder sites that's trying to extort money from me that I'll buy that website.
Uh-huh.
So it's Businesses Grow. And I like this idea about the teaser because this is really important on the social web and blogging. And in the social media world, the teaser is really the headline. Because people tend to scan, right? They're very busy. And in an information-dense world, they're just looking at these headlines. So I think, this is kind of a secondary point. But headlines are so important to blogging and everything you do on the web. You know, I do like to think about the future and where things are going. And so I started thinking about Twitter and reading articles about how this is really going to be the first social media Olympics. 4 years ago when we had the Olympics, the social web was still nascent. It was just taking off. And a lot of people didn't have the mobile devices to create instant content like they do now. Now you're going to be in London. It's a highly wired city. It's a very, very digital city. And you've got every single Olympian that has a Twitter handle. Every single event has a Twitter handle. And it's going to be exciting for me to see how Twitter affects the news of the Olympics, how it may even create the news of the Olympics. If someone is on a medal stand and tweets a picture of what it looks like to be on the medal stand, that's news. I would click on that. That would make my heart skip a beat to see what it looks like to be on a medal stand. And we are going to have that real-time content coming at us in an unprecedented way. The second thing that I think is going to be interesting and really transformational is how other parts of the world that may not really know Twitter or Facebook are going to be signing up to these platforms in droves because that's the only way they're going to be able to get this information. It's the only way they're going to be able to follow these, you know, the insider view of their favorite athletes and their favorite performances. So I think it's going to spread the popularity of some of these programs. It's going to teach the power of social media in places of the world that may not necessarily have been connected to it before. And then finally, I think it's going to be extremely interesting to see how all this gets integrated, how the social web, news, photos, opinions, controversies that are coming through Twitter get worked into the NBC newscast and the other traditional media that's going to be covering this. So I think that's going to be very, very interesting to watch. I predict, you know, we've never seen anything like it, that there is going to be this interactive capability with the Olympics that we've never seen before.
It's interesting that the one undeniable truth that no one can challenge is there is only so much time. There's only 24 hours in a day, and there are only so many years that we will all be on this earth, and hopefully we'll all be in good health and be here for many years. But there's only so much we can do, and there's only so much we can pay attention to. So what's your personal philosophy to get the most out of social media? We've got LinkedIn, Twitter, blogs, blogging on other people's blogs, content marketing. I mean, there's just so much. How do people get their mind around this, and what approach should they take?
Yeah. Well, that is such an excellent question. And in some respects, Howard, it is the question as far as how do we make this transition. So a couple of things to consider. First of all, I mean, any business, big or small, is engaged in some type of marketing activity. This might be an excellent time to reevaluate where are we spending our marketing time and money and resources. newspaper advertising, adjusted for inflation, is right now back to 1950s levels. Last year, 27 out of the top 28 newspapers in the United States lost circulation. Newspapers are going away. Television is being revolutionized. There's no such thing as regularly scheduled programming anymore. People are watching it through Netflix or through Hulu or an app on the iPad, and they're not seeing, you're not able to connect through local advertising like you used to. Even websites, 68% of the Fortune 100 companies had a decline in the visitors to their websites in the last 12 months, all right? So even if you've got a website, that's not necessarily good enough anymore. Where are people spending their time? The social web. So you need to understand it. If you don't understand it and make a good decision for your business, it's like not understanding TV or not understanding newspapers or all the other ways you've been advertising. So I think the first point is, you know, reevaluate. Don't just make it an add-on. It might be a time to adjust, to say, look, we need to spend a little less money on newspapers and a little more money on content for the social web. The second thing I would advise companies on is, for at least some period of time, get some help. It is confusing. It can be overwhelming. The learning curve can be very steep, and you can waste a lot of time and effort that is unnecessary if you just get guidance for maybe 3 to 6 months. It's kind of like the first time you step out of a plane to do a skydive. Usually people are strapped to an instructor. So why not strap yourself to an instructor for 3 to 6 months to get a little help? Then the last thing I would say is just try one thing. Look at, don't try to do everything. Start with maybe a blog, or maybe start to understand Twitter, or depending on your audience, maybe Facebook or YouTube. But just try to understand one channel. You don't have to do everything all at one time. Understand blogging or Twitter or whatever you choose. Work on it for a few months. Get good at it for a few months, and then try the next thing.
In your biography, you mentioned that you had the opportunity to study with Peter Drucker. And if any of our listeners don't know who Peter Drucker is, go to your computer, go to the internet, pull his name up, and really get an education as to who this person is. So how did that happen? Who was Peter Drucker? Maybe we can shortcut the process here.
Yeah.
And how in the world did you get the opportunity to work with such a great mind?
Well, I was living in Los Angeles, and this was in the late 80s and early 90s, and Peter Drucker was kind of in the twilight of his career, and he was teaching at the Claremont Graduate University Business School. In fact, it was the Peter Drucker School of Business. And so I applied for this program to study with Peter Drucker, and I was rejected because they said I was too young. I was still in my 20s, and this was an executive program. So basically, a program for, you know, higher level executives. So basically, I fought, and I convinced them that they needed my diversity. They needed young people in the program to add to the diversity of the program. And after months and months of negotiation and tenacity, I got accepted to the program. And it was a traditional MBA program, but the difference was I got to study with Peter Drucker. He was my teacher, he was my mentor, and clearly the most brilliant man I've ever met. And the thing that made him brilliant was he could cut through the complexity of any situation and just distill it to its essence. And it was amazing to watch. It was just breathtaking. You know, you'd sit there, and we used the case study method in many of the classes at Claremont. And you would go into this case study in this what you would think would be this hopelessly unsolvable problem. And Professor Drucker would sit at the edge of his desk with a thermos full of coffee and a box of chocolate donuts, and he would sit there for a couple hours without any notes and just teach us and just tell us how he would approach these problems. And it was very humbling, but I mean, there is not a single day of my life that I don't use these lessons that he taught me. And it's really an approach to business. It's a mindset that was just so valuable. You know, really, it's almost to look at business, you know, as a puzzle, and there might be pieces missing. So you need to look at the bigger picture of the puzzle and not really focus necessarily on the problem, but you need to focus on that space. What's missing? What's not there that should be there? And also the power of asking the right questions instead of having the right answers. Sometimes you need to ask the right questions as a leader, as a manager. That is a very important skill to have.
So what our audience really needs to understand is, although you are a natural, you are a business person, you have an open mind, you not only learn a great deal, but you're also creating ideas and thoughts for other people, is you just didn't wake up in the morning and become so successful. You had to study long and hard, do a lot of work, have a few missteps along the way, and just continue to work on it. And our listeners need to do the same thing, especially in this economy. You just can't quit. Quitting is not an option. You're allowed to be negative for a moment or an hour, or maybe you have a bad day, but the next day you have to go right back at it. And if you're not being successful, you're not doing the right things.
Right.
So it's important, if you're not doing the right things, ask the question, why am I not, what am I doing that's not working? And if you don't understand what you're doing that's not working, in whatever the field that you're talking about, whether it's business, social media, whatever it happens to be, consult with someone who's been through it, who can help you walk through it. Whatever the cost is, you'll find that the cost is relatively inexpensive to what the cost will be if you just sit there and you just try to understand it yourself. So, Mark, you are so busy. What's next for you?
Well, you know, I'm working on some really wonderful client activities right now. And what I've found I love to do most, Howard, is really corporate workshops, because I'm at a really special time in my life where I've had so many great life experiences, such a great education, and work with so many amazing companies that I find that I can really have a powerful impact on companies and their strategies in a short period of time. So if they're struggling with marketing strategy, or how do I integrate social media, or even something simple like, you know, how do we create an effective blog? How do we find that targeted audience? What I'm really working on now is working with companies on very specific workshops, just as you said, to kind of get them over the hump, to kind of reinvent them. And I've had the opportunity to work with some really amazing companies, and it's very rewarding to be able to walk in and have an impact on a relatively short period of time. And I'm working on a couple new book projects. I'm working with my friend Stanford Smith on a book that's going to be similar to the Twitter book, but it's going to be about blogging. So again, it's going to be a short book, a punchy book that you'll be able to read in 90 minutes and understand the fundamental aspects of blogging and how you can put it to work for your business.
So you are a businessman. You are an author. You are an educator. You do corporate work. You do a blog. And I also believe that you do some individual consulting too.
I do. That's something that's available on my website, because what I found was, I mean, I'm really passionate, Howard, about also helping small business people and entrepreneurs. I mean, I just love doing that. And so, you know, a small business or an entrepreneur might not be able to, afford to hire me, you know, for some kind of engagement. Maybe they just need to talk to somebody for an hour or a couple hours to bounce some ideas off of them. So I do have an opportunity on my website where people can sign up and say, look, I've got some problems. I've got some ideas. I'd just like to talk to you for an hour. And I love that. And it's introduced me to such a diverse number of people, you know, whether it could be a doctor, it could be someone in market research. I've worked with, call centers, nonprofits, hospitals that just are stuck on some problem, and I love doing that. I just love staying in touch with small businesses and entrepreneurs and helping them with their problems as well. So I work with everybody from, you know, Johnson & Johnson down to people that are, you know, a small family-owned business.
So you work from everyone from Johnson to Johnson to Freddie Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I may steal that, Howard.
No problem. You're welcome to. Okay, so I've been listening to every word, and I've been trying to not talk as much and listen to what you have to say and hang on every word, because it's truly valuable. And how can business people further contact you? Let's get that correct website in. Where are your books available? And how can they follow up with you?
Well, the big thing is if you can spell my last name right, you can generally find me. So if you Google Mark Schaefer, it's Schaefer, like the beer, Schaefer beer.
Okay, can you spell that once? Can you spell that once again, just in case someone didn't get it?
It's Mark Schaefer, Schaefer. My website is businessesgrow.com, and there are lots of ways to contact me through my website. My email and phone number is all over the site. My blog is also there. I write something every day. I have some content on there every day about marketing, digital marketing, social media, and really how this affects us as organizations and as people. So a lot of people love my blog. My books are on there as well. You can find them. They're available on Amazon. And I've also got a lot of free stuff on my site. Somebody mentioned to me the other day, they said, oh, I enjoy just looking at all the free resources you have on your site. So it's interesting, as I develop different things, PowerPoint presentations or classes, I've got videos on my site that I've got a lot of free or low-cost content on my site for business people as well.
Well, Mark, thank you for joining us today. I've actually enjoyed this. I have learned from it, and I continue. We follow you. And when I say we, that's my assistant and I follow you, read your feeds coming in. and always try to learn more. And that's what people should be doing. They should be absolutely saying to themselves, all right, this conversation was a good start. I've gotten some insight. How do I move the conversation forward? And if you have any business questions from today's show, you can tweet me and ask me those questions on Twitter at Howard LeWinter, or email me directly at howard@talkbusinesswithhoward.com. That's talk, T-A-L-K, talkbusinesswithhoward.com. And, of course, you can always connect with me on LinkedIn and Facebook. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I'd like you to remember that although we're in an economic downturn and there are no signs of any quick recovery, there's vast opportunity around there. And where's the vast opportunity? The vast opportunity is in your brain, in your mind, in your thinking. The business is out there. Are you going to come into modern times? Are you going to study what's going on today? Are you going to understand how to reach your customers? Are you going to understand and you're going to take the time to educate yourself? Are you going to lead your company? Are you going to be in a position where you turn around and say, hey, I'm not losing. I am really good at this. I have a business. I have great customer service. I have something to offer my clients, and I also have something to offer the people that don't even know I exist. So all of the social media is about keeping yourself relevant with the people that you're doing business with. And it's about letting people know who you are, and it's about you finding out who other people are who will be able to help you. You know, we are all in this together. Sometimes that's a point that's missed. We are business people who deal with other business people, and you may be in the consumer business. You may deal with consumers, but it's people dealing with people, and we need to use social media. Social media is just a new way of contacting people. It's a new way of getting the message out. So until the next time, this is Howard LeWinter. Thank you for listening. Signing off. So long for now. Talk with you soon.
Connect with Howard anytime at talkbusinesswithhoward.com. You can also continue the conversation with Howard on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thank you for listening to Talk Business with Howard.